Welcome to the queue. My name is Nurse Bug. I'm your friendly neighborhood nurse surveyor.
And hi, I'm Tina Webster. I'm so glad you joined us.
Hey, y'all. It's Amanda. Thanks for listening.
Hey, I'm John Pugliot, and I'm your friendly neighborhood consultant pharmacist.
So today, we're going to be talking about narcotic diversion in nursing homes. And I didn't realize how big a problem this was until I started researching the topic. I mean, I knew it was a problem as a surveyor. I've seen it before, but just how big a problem is. Not only does it endanger the health of residents, it drains resources, it's a waste of money, it's a betrayal of trust to your residents. The cost to health insurers was an estimated $72.5 billion a year. And determining diversion is problematic. Facilities record which meds are given according to the proper schedule. And when a resident's unable to report that meds aren't administered, so if they're cognitively impaired, they're not aware, admins rely on the medical records alone. And the person completing those records can be the same one who's diverting. So that can be an easy way for them to manipulate the system. They can sub other types of meds to attempt to make the residents think they were given the dosage that they were needing or were supposed to get. And the most common opioids that are diverted are codeine, Demerol, fentanyl, oxycodone, Dilaudid, morphine, and Vicodin. It said that admins and family should be alert for signs and symptoms of drug diversion, which could be complaints by residents of meds not being administered for those that are cognitive, increased pain after a med has supposedly been given, erratic or irrational behavior by the caregiver responsible for the administering the med, or behavior inconsistent with the norm for the resident or the caregiver, really. Denying medications to vulnerable residents needing them is abuse. And it talked about how if you suspected that, you should call the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, you know, once it's been addressed with the facility, if it's still a problem.
I think that one of the things that I've came across as figuring out a drug diversion is not being able to control a resident's pain. Sometimes it's very hard to control pain, especially in end of life, but when you have that consistency and the pain just keeps on getting higher and higher and you're utilizing a drug and you keep on increasing it, it's still not touching it. That has been an indication for me as far as drug diversion.
I read that that was a huge signal. That should be your first indication that something's wrong.
I think a lot of times we're trying to look for maybe employees that are altered as a sign. And while that can be a complication of diversion where the staff are utilizing the medications that are meant for the patient, a lot of times when somebody gets to this level of addiction to divert medications at their job, they're often just maintaining their habit. And so you sometimes will not see alterations in their mentation. So that makes it really difficult. This is not somebody that is naive to opiates that's just going to, let me take a Vicodin today and see what happens. This is somebody that needs to maintain just a level of stability by diverting medications. And so one of the triggers that you might think you would see, you oftentimes don't in these cases.
That's a great point. I was going to say, one or two of the nurses that I've known that have diverted or I have been a part of, their records for giving were always pristine. They were not sloppy. There was no missing amount. It was calculated to the CC. You know, the record looked beautiful. Some of the ways that you were able to see that is morphine is colored when it comes in that liquid form, and it's colored specifically. I know that I've seen it colored a blue and a pink, right? But it's very specific. When you pull up a syringe and it's no longer that color, red flags should go off. You know, so make sure you know what color your pharmacy that you're getting your medications from colors it, because that's part of what they do, you know, to help decrease that diversion.
One tip off that you can see, and we see this in a bunch of different practice settings, is maybe somebody that's over eager to administer meds for other people. Hey, I want to be helpful. I want to be over eager. I know your patient, your hospice patient is really difficult. Why don't you just go take a break and I'll take care of their medications? And so while we don't see the altered mental status sometimes with those diverters, we will sometimes see an over eagerness to to help specifically with medications and not with other aspects of patient care.
Mm-hmm. Or asking for the keys. I'll hold the keys for you while you're gone, you know, whatever might be. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So the next article that I looked into, it talked about, it gave two examples of losses. An investigation showed an LTC resident did not receive doses of a medication for 9 days due to diversion. And it was a pain med. And then another one was officials in Connecticut identified 21 instances of loss of schedule 2, 3, 4, and 5 controlled substances in 15 months. And some of the trends that they found was lack of policy and procedure, of course, inadequate policy and procedure, or not followed internally. Meds left unsecured, not reconciling the meds, no shift change count. I mean, there's just so many different ways that it could happen, but those were the ones they identified. I know all of us have at least one, if not two, stories of different drug diversion issues that you've had. I'll go first. When I was a surveyor in Kansas, I went to many, many places where we had to look into certain things. But one that sticks out in my mind was related to a hospice resident. And this hospice resident had passed away, and the nurse caring for them, I don't know if in their mind it was better to do it this way because they didn't feel like they were taking away from a resident that needed it because this resident had passed away. But a couple hours after the resident passed away, he chugged a little bottle of morphine, just chugged it. He had been clean for 2 years, hadn't had an incident. And then just because these bottles were here, he just chugged them. And he fell asleep on the empty bed next to the resident. And that's when they caught him the next morning because he was asleep. So that, of course, was a situation.
Couldn't wait to get high, I guess. Yes. I mean, I'm not trying to bring light to it. It's just like, wow. I don't know what else to say. Like, wow. Like, I guess in one sense, thanks for not taking drugs away from the resident that was dying and that needed them. We hope. But then again, still the same. You're 2 years clean.
And you just gave all that up.
What happened? What triggered you to for that stressful situation to occur? Was it the death of this resident? If so, you know, why did you speak out?
Call the nurse that's over on the other side of the building and say, hey, you know what? Right now I need you to come take the keys and I got to take a break or something. I don't pretend to know or understand the addict because it's a complicated thing. So,
we're not debating that part. I was going to say, too, talking about not reconciling meds or no count during shift change, as a DON, I had no idea that this was even fathomable to even do this. But when I went to my building that I was trying to keep out a special focus survey, you know, this was a very great people working there that just didn't have any guidance as far as clinical wise. And this was a common practice for them to not count narcotics. I had never not in my career not counted off or during shift change, but they totally, it was like, say la B. And I'm like, oh no, 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 no. I was like, okay, just so everybody knows, if I catch you that, we're automatically going to final written warning, period. And if you do it again, you're automatically terminated because first of all, you're working underneath my license and I want to protect it. And second, use your common sense. You want to protect your own license. So anybody out there that is not doing this or it's not a common practice, make it. You are going to be the one that is on the line in the end, period, period, period.
Well, and not only CMS could come in, but the DEA could get involved.
Exactly.
And then, like, I mean, it's major.
It is.
Those penalties are like shut down your facility. There's some criminal penalties if you knowingly just don't have any policies and procedures to prevent diversion. So it's more than just getting a fine if you're neglectful.
And that's what I was going to say too. This is another common practice. As a DON, do not waste drugs with anybody in your facility. It doesn't matter if it's two RNs. Waste drugs with your pharmacist, period. That is a regulation. You waste with them, nobody else. Just throwing that out there.
had ones that waste with their DON only, like the nurse and the DON, because the pharmacist isn't always there, you know, to do that.
Yeah, but I understand that, but I would not, as like just as a DON as my practice, like I wasted with my pharmacist always. Yeah. Like I wouldn't waste with another nurse. I want to protect myself. I want to protect the nurse that's with me and the pharmacist as well, because you have three licensures all in one setting.
The third article that I found, it gave a few other examples of drug diversion that were found. They were case studies. The first one talked about a Rhode Island licensed nurse that was convicted of stealing oxycodone pills from a nursing home where she worked. And she attempted to conceal the theft by replacing the med with something that looked similar to it. The second was a VA nurse. A VA nurse convicted of siphoning off a resident's liquid morphine. Siphoning off and then replacing it. And of course, it was tinted, you know, a little bit different. And so they noticed it. The third one was there was three nurses in a North Dakota hospice convicted of stealing and diluting meds, gave morphine sulfate instead of the prescribed hydromorphone to manage pain. And a common tactic that it noted was that they substitute meds with that look similar with less effective drugs or saline placebos. I mean, that's just what they were finding with it. The fourth one was an Ohio nurse convicted of stealing painkillers, forging documents to cover the theft. The fifth was an Iowa nurse convicted of stealing 10,000 pain pills, tampering with records. One resident, 10,000. She was there long enough to steal that many and they didn't notice it.
My goodness, that's a lot.
The sixth one was a Texas nurse convicted of stealing narcotics from a nursing home, and she used a forged RX. So she got a hold of a prescription pad and she was forging these to get her fix. So it talks about how they could fix these with increased record reconciliation processes designed to alert to anomalies in documentation and the telltale signs that you're going to see, you know, when this happens. Unexpected increases in med orders, especially opioids, in excess of what a resident might reasonably require. A common form of diversion was theft from existing stock. So like if you have those cards that are in your cart, that was the major way they were doing this, because it's difficult to detect because there's a lower quantity of meds stolen. And with those cards, like you said, sometimes people don't count at shift change. Sometimes people don't pay attention if there's a different type of med in there. And that's what you have to pay attention to. They talked about that you could be compliant by having med room access limited to authorized staff. Carts are locked, secured, DC'd meds are removed, destroyed, or return per state requirement, multi-dose vials discarded after 28 days or according to manufacturer's instructions. It gave a few of those. So I would like to let you guys go on your stories for this part.
Well, you know, we had a problem with nurses. When drugs would be delivered, she would remove the packaging sheet along with the card of drugs. We determined by looking at the cameras that this young lady had done that. So we put a different system in place. You know, we looked at our system and found that we added an additional column to the count sheet that had at the beginning of the sheet, at the beginning of the shift, how many sheets did they have? Not only the sheets, but of course the cards. And we added that at the beginning of the shift and at the end of the shift. We could tell if a packaging sheet, had disappeared during a shift. And that seemed to help deter anybody from it being so easy to remove. You waited for the delivery, pharmacy delivery guy, and basically it was showed her on camera, just as pretty as please. She just took that sheet along with the card of drugs and folded and put it in her pocket, and no one even could tell because the sheets were never logged anywhere there at the facility.
We all try our best to complete people from diverting. That's what's so important to have an IDT a part of it, but it's still going to happen. I think the biggest thing though for us is like, be honest about it. Open up your eyes to it. It's hard. It's hard. These are hard situations, but you grow from it.
You sure do.
With 50 years of experience and experts across all areas of nursing home care, QSource genuinely understands the needs of your facility. We've always been there alongside you, and we've walked in your shoes. No matter the situation, QSource is prepared to tackle your challenges, solve your issues, and answer your questions. Let QSource encourage, educate, and empower you. Contact us at any time at qsource.org. We will always be here to help. And now back to the podcast.
Okay, so the fourth article that I found talked about percentages and it gave some stats that I thought were super interesting. So about 33% of long-stay residents use opioids and 14.5% were long-term. 47.2 million doses were lost due to staff misuse and theft in 2018. That is a astronomical amount of doses. Big volume. And 94% of diversion is opioids. I mean, that's most of it. The temptation to steal excess doses of opioids to sell on the black market are great for staff that are only making, you know, that minimum wage, that are struggling to make ends meet. They may be dealing with addiction and steal for their own use. 11% of seniors that were surveyed for this expressed that drug diversion issues happened while they were in LTC facilities receiving care. The most important part of it is to understand the issue, you know, educate staff about it, rely on your consulting pharmacists to help develop programs to keep under tabs on meds and help tighten up the ship. You're going to limit over prescribing because you need frequent reassessment of the resident by the IDT to determine whether to continue those meds or decrease or titrate or whatever you're going to do.
That's a big part, Lindsay. John just also assisted QSource in completing one of our CMP projects for opioid reduction. I mean, we are in an opioid pandemic. Y'all had some really big statistics on like misuse of opioids for chronic management, correct?
Yeah, we saw a ton of it. And it was just complacency. It wasn't that there was anything wrong or that the facility was trying to give too many opiates. It was a lot of it was just, well, Granny's been on this Vicodin or Norco for years and years, so we're just going to continue it. And what we ended up doing is we kind of went to these facilities and we didn't say, all right, cold turkey, everybody off opiates. We said, all right, let's set aside people that need it. Let's set aside our hospice patients, patients that actually have some acute pain, maybe they had a fall and they're, you know, short-term getting pain. And let's focus on these people that are getting long-term high-intensity opiates. And what we did and how this relates back to diversion is we started with the highest intensity opiates first, and we kind of tried to back them down from scheduled to PRN to lower dosing and get them off of that and add non-opiates. And what that did was that even though there was a percentage of patients in the facilities that were still on opiates, they weren't as attractive. Like, these opiates are not all equally attractive to diverters. And so some opiates are a lot less attractive. It's easier to swap out injectables and oral liquids than it is tablets. It wasn't the focus for us to try to help with diversion, but one of the consequences of some of our work with our facilities was that we got rid of highly divertible or highly attractive medications in favor of medications that were better for the patient anyway, but also were less likely to be a subject of diversion.
But you mitigated that risk, right?
Yeah.
So you took that reduction and you mitigated the risk for diversion by helping to reduce some of those opioids. So I'd say, I mean, I think that was a positive outturn related to it. So, I mean, QSource is here to help you with management of pain. Everybody's in pain. If you hit a certain age, you know, just day-to-day arthritis, osteoporosis, et cetera, just movement or decreased movement, it hurts. I mean, take consideration if you're sitting for long periods of time. I'm just 38 years old. And if I sit for a long period of time, my back hurts, right? I have to get up and move, you know, my legs fell asleep. So I could only imagine. QSource is here to help you with individualization of your residents with pain management. Or if you have a high increase of opioid usage in your facility, we have subject matter experts like John that can help you manage this.
We can also teach you about doing that documenting of the chain of possession and getting that in an order, because sometimes it can be a little messy because you want to be able to prove the chain in the event of an issue. You want to get buy-in and launch the process to better manage drugs, involve your key staff and all staff for that matter. you want to deploy tech, authorized staff should dispense limited amounts of meds immediately before administration to residents, eliminating those multi-dose punch cards that easily disappear, as you said, Tina. It's a reporting system that tracks who used it, when, and it provides accountability for nurses, eliminating that temptation to divert because you're going to get caught. There's no way around it. That's what you're going to do. And that kind of leads me into the fifth article that I looked at. It talked about how facilities are going to be held accountable for this. Legal action, loss of staff, poor industry reputation. They really need to have attention focused on drug diversion programs to protect their residents and their staff and promote safe healthcare practices. And one reason that they found that drug diversion happens so easily is that there's extremely high rates of staff turnover. And that leads to staff that are unfamiliar with policies and procedures. And unfamiliarity equals exploitation by diverters as an excuse for poor med practices. They may move on to the next target facility before they're caught by you, before they're reprimanded, before they're reported. And then the cycle just keeps going. And facilities using paper charting, that's really easy to manipulate and really hard to detect. So tech really kind of changes the whole game when it comes to that. Another layer of complexity added as meds are already dispensed and nurses are handling that supply like those cards, there's no electronic trail of access. And vulnerable residents, you know, those with cognitive impairment, they're seen as easy targets for diverters because they're unaware of their surroundings. They're easily manipulated. You know, if they swap out the med, usually they're not going to notice, you know, unless their regular routine of meds. So the LTC facilities accounted for 18% of all drug diversion incidents, which I thought was interesting too. The next article talks about violations of the Controlled Substance Act. It included staff who diverted residents' meds for themselves. Like I said, it may open providers up to additional False Claims Act liabilities. So when a diversion is discovered, the government no longer takes the view that it's going to simply focus on potential prosecution of the staff that diverted it, okay? Not just that one person. Instead, it's going to demand answers on how the diversion occurred, when. It's going to focus on record keeping, security, reporting practices, and then compliance failures can be connected to false claims allegations eventually, and that's going to become pretty costly. And drug diversion cases in nursing homes are not rare. We know that. A study last year reviewed 107 reported diversions at LTC facilities in Minnesota alone. And on average, more than 30 tabs per resident were stolen. And it was commonly, you know, the oxy, the hydrocodone, the tramadol, hydromorphone, and then morphine. And the idea that they're thinking about, it makes providers employing the diverter susceptible to that enforcement action along with the diverter. And the threat of litigation is hundreds, thousands, and millions of dollars for failing to follow regulations for billing of Medicare and Medicaid programs. So they're going to have to put safeguards in place, make access limited, complete audits to ensure they're compliant and sufficient to safeguard everything. I just thought that one was really interesting too, because it kind of summed up everything we talked about. It's going to become costly if you don't figure out what your process needs to be. And that's exactly what QSource, like you said, Amanda, can do. We can come in there. How can we help you prevent drug diversion? Okay. We're going to improve your processes. We're going to assess the entire med process from dispensing, delivery, storage to prep, admin, documentation, and all the way to destroying it. Hiring and management practices, education, monitoring and investigation, all of that is going to be what we're going to help with. We want to decrease the risk. Understanding the issue is the most important part, because 1 in 10 Americans have a substance abuse disorder. They do. And 6 to 8% are nurses that practice impaired. So
that's
it's
a really high number. That's what you would think. It's a high number. It is. It's a high number.
Educating staff is going to increase their awareness. You know, it might tip them off to seeing something that they wouldn't have normally paid attention to. Like, this is odd. Why is this happening? And report it. Some just go about their day and they're like, oh, well, you know, that was a change, but no big deal. And then later you figure out, well, if it would have been reported, we could have stopped this weeks ago, months ago, years ago. They're going to learn the investigation process. Ooh, I can't talk today. You know, neglect, exploitation, care concerns, basically all systems to decrease diversion opportunity at all. We're going to assess the facility assessment too. We'll do observations for vulnerabilities, controlled substance counts with, you talked about Is it with two nurses always that they do controlled substance?
It should be. Yes, it should be.
Yeah, to review and audit. And then, of course, we're going to talk to your staff. We're going to find out their knowledge already. Interviews to identify the broken processes, because maybe there's just kind of a education broken process. And it's a systemic approach. We're going to prioritize all interventions, decrease drug diversion, and improve resident safety. And that's the whole goal. That's the whole goal. We want the medications that are supposed to go to residents that deserve them and need them and use them to get them. Yeah. Okay. Is there anything you guys want to add before I go to the teaser? No? Okay. All right. So next week, we're going to be talking about memory care and dementia care activities. And I believe we have a guest speaker. His name is Brian Reif, and he is an activities director with a multitude of experience. Really excited to talk to him. Thanks for joining the CUES Weekly podcast for all your nursing home needs and topics. And until next time, have a great week, guys. Say bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the CUES.
Thank you for listening to this QSource podcast. If you ever find yourself needing QSource to assist your facility, please reach out to us at qsource.org so our long-term care experts can help you through the process. If you want to hear more podcasts like this, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your favorite audio. Just search for QSource and you will find us. Thank you and have an amazing day.